Hello, it's Michael Steed here, and welcome to my podcast on the 2012 Autumn Statement, which was presented to Parliament on the 5th of December 2012. Note, please, the change of title. It's no longer the pre-budget report, it's now the Autumn Statement. Hey-ho, how times change. There's quite a lot of interesting material in the statement, and of course it's driven mostly by the macroeconomic situation. And whilst this is not going to be a treatise on economics, we're forced to recognise that nearly all of the tax measures are down to the worry about the deficit, how we're going to bring the borrowing down, and how we're going to raise government income by raising taxes. Always, of course, an unpopular measure. So what's the Chancellor had to fence with? Well, there's a lowered growth forecast. That's both from the government and the OBR. That's the Office of Budget Responsibility. And I must admit, I heard the head of the OBR talk about his economic projections on Newsnight last night, and it was a bit of an eye-opener. Him basically saying that it's all tosh, that it's all rubbish, it's bound to be wrong. How can you believe that? Anyway, so we've got lower growth forecasts and a borrowing bill that's barely going down. And notice Ed Balls crying foul when he got up to talk when he said that the government had cheated by including in advance the income from the auctions of the 4G licences, which were sort of thought to bring in about £3.5 billion. And if you took those out of the picture, borrowing actually would have gone up considerably. So overall, the economy is set to shrink in 2012. The OBR, if you can believe them at all, reckons it's going to be about 0.8 of 1%, with very stunted growth in the next 3 years. So, as all the papers are saying, it's all about austerity. And I suppose the one bright spark that actually caused people to cheer was the decision by the Chancellor to scrap the 3p fuel duty, and I think most motorists in the country, me included, would have heaved a sigh of relief on that one. Of course, politically, it's a good point, isn't it? It's immediate, people relate to it. And I wonder if they'll be quite so happy when they read some of the other proposals. Everyone's talking about the squeezing at the top, the squeezing at the bottom. But as we will see when we talk about personal allowances in just a second or two, there's also the squeeze around about the basic rate, higher rate threshold. So let's start then with personal allowances. And in order to get the trend here, to get the big picture, I'd like to go back to Budget 2012, when the Chancellor announced that the personal allowance was going up from 7475 in the 2012 tax year to 8105 in the 2013 tax year, the current tax year. Now, even my maths can cope with that. That's gone up by £630. Now, I think we all appreciate that, historically at least, if there's an increase in the personal allowance because of the way that the stacking system works in the British tax canon, then if you're a higher rate taxpayer, you do proportionately better because it saves you income being taxed at your top rate of tax than if you are, say, a basic rate taxpayer where you're going to get the effect of £630 just at your basic rate of tax. So £630 at 20%, that's £126 by my reckoning. Now, the Chancellor did something quite cunning, and the reason I'm just harping back to this is because we're going to see this as a bit of a trend. So in the 2012 budget, with one hand, he increased the personal allowance by £630, and with the other hand, he shrank the basic rate bandwidth by an equivalent £630. And of course, that's quite clever, isn't it? Because what it means is that although everybody will be better off by £630 at 20%, that's my £126, higher rate taxpayers won't be proportionately better off. So that was where we were in Budget 2012. And that pattern sort of repeats itself in the next tax year, that's 2013-14, but it's got a twist. And instead of the increase in the personal allowance being matched by an exact equal shrinking of the basic rate bandwidth, what he's done is to raise the personal allowance, and that's going up, and this was the announcement in the autumn statement, going up from 8105 to a bit higher than he'd previously announced to 9440. Now that's £1,335. And for a basic rate taxpayer, That's worth $1,335 at 20%. That's £267. But instead of shrinking the basic weight bandwidth by exactly the same £1,335, what he's done, and this of course is subject to the draft legislation, which is going to be published on the 11th of December, but I think we can be moderately confident about this, is that he is going to shrink the basic rate band not by that £1,335, but by £2,360. So instead of everybody being better off by £267 across the board, because he's shrunk the basic rate band by £2,360, considerably more than the £1,335 increase in the personal allowance, what it comes to, I think, is this, that although basic rate taxpayers will be better off by £267 next year, higher rate taxpayers are only going to be better off by £62. And that's what I'm thinking of as being the squeezed middle. So if you were to crunch that for somebody on, say, £44,000, which is still pretty handsome by the standards of a lot of people in the UK, but it's by no means at the top end. So we're talking here kind of middle managers, teachers, headmasters, policemen and women and so on and so forth. Then they're the people, in my view here, the squeezed middle, who are going to actually notice that. So that's my kind of first thought on the way that personal allowances are happening in 2013. So that's the big news on personal allowances for the working population here. Of course, the 9,440 is very much on track with Nick Clegg, the minister behind the curtain here, whose influence is being felt because, as he's on record as stating, he wants everybody in the UK to be on the same £10,000 per annum personal allowance before the end of the life of the current parliament in 2015. But what you do need to do is to work out where the pensioners are in all this. Now, we do know the pre-announcements in the budget 2012 do not seem to have been disturbed in the autumn statement. So I think, again, subject only to anything being hidden away deep in the legislation, then the freezing of the allowances, this was the part of the granny tax, one part of two parts in the granny tax, and that is that existing pensioners would be frozen. So if you are a 65 to 74, you're going to remain at 10,500. And if you are a 75 upwards, you're going to be frozen at 10,660. Remind yourself, if you would please, that the other part of the granny tax is that if you're not 65 by the time you get to the 5th of April 2013, then you won't be migrating from the sort of normal working age population allowances onto the extended allowances. Just looking down at the numbers released by HMRC, the income limit is actually going up in 2013-14. Remember that the age allowances are all means tested, and the testing is by reference to the adjusted net income. I mean, we just blithely refer to the income limit, but actually what you're testing against the income limit, and I just say again, for the sake of clarity, that is going to be 26,100, and that's up from the current year of 25,400, that you're testing against that limit the adjusted net income. Now, that's the same concept, incidentally, as we're going to see with the child benefit rules, when we say somebody between 50 and 60 is going to start to see a tax charges creeping in on their child benefit. And it's exactly the same phrase as when we talk about people losing their personal allowance above £100,000. And just to be clear about that, if you take any income, whether it's from salary or whether it's from self-employed earnings, then what you do is you take off any salary sacrifice, you take off any losses that you may have incurred, and that brings you down from your income to your net income, and then you adjust it. And you principally adjust it by two mechanisms. The first is payments into pensions, and more of that in just a second. And the second is payment into charity. So if you were somebody just above the pensioner's limit, you could make a contribution to charity and reduce yourself back below the income limit. If you're somebody just above £100,000, then you can bring yourself back below £100,000 to get your full personal allowance, again by making a contribution to charity and a contribution to pensions. I suppose there is a kind of an additional rate planning point here, isn't there? Which I'll just refer to because it just occurred to me that this is going to be relevant. And that is that if you are an additional rate taxpayer, and this is going to be one of my few high net worth points on this podcast, it's worth noting that you can carry back charitable contributions, but you cannot carry back pension contributions. The only thing you can do with pension contributions, and as I said, I'll deal with those in just a second, is that if you've got any bought forward unused annual allowance, you can bring that forward for a maximum of 3 years, which of course under the current numbers gives you a theoretical maximum of £200,000 maximum contributions. Now, as we see, that number's going to be shrinking within a couple of tax years, and as I said, more of that in just a second. So all up then, these things are tested by reference to adjusted net income. So pensioners' income, income for child benefit purposes, income for working out whether your personal allowances are going to be eroded. Remember, it's always adjusted net income. Just one final point about the carryback on the charitable contributions. Remember that if you want to do the carryback, and that does make sense for an additional rate taxpayer, doesn't it? That if they pay it, on the assumption that the top rate of tax will fall back from 50 to 45 in April 2013, on the assumption there's going to be no change to that proposal, then it sort of makes sense to make a payment in what I'm going to call 45 pence times. That's from 2013, April 2013 onwards, and then relate them back to the current tax year so you get the relief at 50%. Now, the only practical impediment to that, of course, is that you can only, and it's one of the quirks of the self-assessment system, you can only relate back on the original return. So if you've already put in your return for the 2013 tax year, then you won't, from that date, be able to relate back any charitable contributions made in the following year, that's the 2013-14 tax year, to the 2012-13 tax year. Okay, so that's just something on the immediate increases in personal allowances and this reduction in the basic rate bandwidth that we've been talking about. What else do we know? What's the Chancellor released? What he has said is that although we don't yet have the details of personal allowances beyond 2013-14, that's the 9440 that we've just referred to, what he did say in a sort of slightly oblique sentence was that the higher rate threshold is going to be increased only by 1% from April 2014 onwards. That's 1% per annum. Now, that's quite interesting because quite a lot of this autumn statement was all about increases only being 1%. And, of course, the immediate conclusion that we can draw from that is that that's not the rate of inflation. So that's below the rate of inflation. So that means there are going to be some losers in there. So what he's referred to is the higher rate threshold, which of course is the sum of the personal allowance and the basic rate band. So if you look at that 9,440, which is the personal allowance for 2013-14, and then you add on the basic rate band, which as I said is shrunk down to £32,010, those two together, about 41,450, then that's the higher rate threshold. So that's the salary, if you like, that somebody would have to be earning in order to start entering the higher rate tax band. Now, that's caused quite a lot of comment in the press because even the government admitted that the number of people caught by that could be as high as 600,000 extra taxpayers within the next two tax years entering the higher rate. And as we've seen from the numbers, that it's not just normal fiscal drag by which allowances don't go up as quickly as wages go up, but there's also been this active reduction and more than just cancelling the increase in the personal allowance for higher rate taxpayers. As we've said on the numbers, they're actually going back for a little bit before they get this 1% increase. So there is very much kind of smoke and mirrors here. Normal Chancellor stuff at budget or here a mini budget time is to sort of give you the headlines. But, you know, as professionals, we've got to look behind those numbers and work out the impact on our clients. I think a word about child benefit. That's obviously been very much in the news because of the proposal that from the end of the first week in January 2013, taxpayers with an income. Remember, that's adjusted net income above £50,000, where we've got a household where you've got at least one partner, parent, who has got income above £50,000, will start to get a tax charge such that by the time they get to an income of £60,000, and the tax charge on their child benefit is exactly equal to the child benefit itself. So the upshot is that where you have a household which has got one earner, that or two earners, where you've got nobody above £50,000, then everybody gets a full child benefit. If you've got a household where one of the parents, one of the earners, is above £50,000, remember, you always take the highest if there are two, then you're going to start to see the erosion upon that. Now, that's been given quite a lot of press coverage, although I don't think the implications of that have particularly sunk into some parents yet. And of course, what it means is that if you're above 60,000, say, then there is an argument for simply writing to HMRC, which you're allowed to do, and say, don't pay me the child benefit at all. Because if you're going to receive it with one hand, then you have to pay it back with another hand, albeit some months later, after the end of the tax year, then you're not going to enjoy that. And remember, it will be picked up through the self-assessment tax system. But I suppose in terms of the child benefit itself, the rates are unchanged between the current tax year 12-13 and the next tax year 13-14. So the first child rate remains at £20.30 a week, and for additional children remains at £13.40. There's also a guardian's allowance, which has actually gone up just a little bit. That goes up from £15.55 a week to £15.90, so that's quite a considerable saving, isn't it? Okay, so what else has the Chancellor announced? I'm not going to go through every number here because we don't have the time for that, but I think it's just worth picking up on one or two of the changes or otherwise to the tax credit system here. So working tax credit, the basic element for 2012-13, the current tax year, is £1,920, and that's not going up. So there are likely to be some changes to the working tax credit, but not until at least 2014. So we've got a frozen limit there. The couple and lone parent element has gone up very slightly from 1950 to 1970. That's from April. So there's a very tiny change there of £20. The 30-hour element remains constant at £790. And there's actually a very slight increase for the disabled worker element. That's gone up by £65. Or should I be more accurate, is going up by £65 from April 2013. And the severe disability limit is going up, again, by a fairly modest sum, by £30. As far as the child tax credit is concerned, the family element remains constant, and the child element and the disabled child element, they're going up very slightly. But, you know, we all know that people who are on the working tax credit and the child tax credit system, they are going to be squeezed just a little bit over the next few years. And, of course, that's created quite a bit of adverse comment, which is why the pundits are referring to the squeezing at the bottom and the top. And as we've added in on this podcast, a bit of squeezing in the middle as well. Let's have a look at what's going on in business taxes. What the government is trying to do is to make sure that Britain remains competitive. And this is something that's sort of haunting the Chancellor, because we've had lots of high-profile defections to places like the Republic of Ireland, that's Sir Martin Sorrell and WPP. And of course, he's tempted by the fact that the corporation tax rate is 12.5% over there compared to the 24% that we've got in the UK. So the Chancellor's very mindful of that. We haven't yet started to talk about Starbucks, have we, and sort of diverting profits over to Luxembourg. And we'll spend a moment or two looking at those sorts of systems in just a second. So effectively, the main corporation tax rate is going to be reduced by another percentage point from 24 to 23% in April 2013. And we're on a downward trajectory, and he's announced that it's going down to 21% in April 2014. I guess the news for us, where we're operating in the SME spectrum, is that the small profits rate, the small companies rate, will remain at 20%. And I think we recognise the reason for that, and that's very simply that the Chancellor doesn't actually want a corporation tax rate to fall lower than the basic rate of taxation. So that's the basic shape on a corporation tax. In terms of CT reliefs, I did note with some amusement that the government is actually planning to introduce a corporation tax relief on video games and animation and sort of high-end TV industries. And what he's trying to do is to get 100% allowance on that relevant expenditure. Or in the alternative, if you've got a loss, you can actually chop that in and get a credit. Now, the thing about that, of course, is that Britain's turning out lots and lots of people who have got, degrees in media studies and so on and so forth. And I think I've been slightly scratching my head and thinking about, well, where are they all going to get jobs? So it's rather interesting that the government, I think, was perhaps driven a little bit by Wallace and Gromit. This is a little bit of the Wallace and Gromit effect, is trying to get people to be creative. And, of course, British films are enormously creative. There's no doubt, for example, that British adverts are, without question, the best in the world. And it is interesting that the government's trying to sort of help that creativity along. And one other angle on the autumn statement was that, I think under pressure from Boris Johnson, the Mayor of London, that parts of London around Old Street are going to be turned into a mini Silicon Valley with lots and lots of creativity, lots of new things happening. And there is some government money that's being set aside to help develop that infrastructure for entrepreneurs. Okay, let's move on then and see what else is happening in the business tax arena. I think something that I personally cheered on was the announcement about the annual investment allowance. Of course, the trajectory for the annual investment allowance has been a downward trajectory, and it wouldn't at all have surprised me if the announcement in the autumn statement was that by April 2013, the AIA, having already dropped from £100,000 to £25,000, would have been phased out completely, and we'd have just been left with, you know, maybe a few bits left and the normal writing down allowances, currently 18 and 8%. So imagine my delight, and I think rather a lot of delight here, that there's going to be a temporary increase in the AIA, and that's from £25,000 to £250,000. And that's just going to be for a period of 2 years. And it looks, and still we're waiting for a little bit of detail here until the draft clauses are actually printed, it looks as though it's for expenditure incurred on or after the 1st of January 2013. Now, if that's the case, and it looks like some of the old first-year allowances before they were kicked out in favour of the AIA, then that does look quite attractive because it's going to allow people to get in there and get some decent capital allowances on expenditure above £25,000. So I thought that was a cracker. In the autumn statement, the Chancellor has come down and hardened up on the so-called cash basis, which will be introduced from April 2013. And remember, this is a simpler income tax scheme for small unincorporated businesses, be they sole traders or conventional partnerships. Notice not for companies or limited liability partnerships. So introduced from April 2013. And remember, there are two strands to this. The first is the cash is king strand, which will allow eligible self-employed individuals and indeed partners to calculate their profits for accounting and tax purposes on the basis that cash passes in and out of their business. And of course, part of that is that they won't be generally having to distinguish between a revenue expense and a capital expense. So if you go out and buy a van, for example, for just say £15,000 all up, then you will simply write that off against your P&L. And if that seems a bit wacky, then think that that's in effect what you're doing at the moment simply by using the AIA. Now, there can be special rules for cars. You won't be able to write off your car under this proposal for the cash basis. The car is going to be put to one side, and they're borrowing the 45-25 system from the authorised mileage allowance payments from ITEPA 2003, that's the Income Tax Earnings and Pensions Act, which will then just put 45 pence a mile for every business mile. Okay, so that's the basic cash basis. So, as I said, they're not going to have to distinguish between revenue and capital. But there's also another part to what I'm just loosely calling the cash basis. And that is that not only small businesses, and remember the cash basis is designed to be linked to the current VAT registration limit, so that's going to be $77,000 in the current tax year, although by the time this comes onto the books, presumably that will have risen by a little bit. But it's not only the unincorporated businesses that are below the VAT limit, but under the proposal for the cash basis, all unincorporated businesses, so that's all regardless of size, will be able to choose to deduct certain expenses on a flat rate basis. So that's what they call the simplified expenses basis. And a good example there would be use of home. It's something that as AAT members, we spend quite a lot of time thinking and worrying about how much should we put in for the use of our house. And we get some quite sort of lively conversations with our clients and indeed between members at tax conferences. That generally sort of talks up into quite a lively bit of conversation. But effectively, it's going to be based upon the number of hours that you reckon you do in the work. But at the top end on the current measures, and these are just announcements, so they need to be hardened up, but it looks like you won't get more than about £4 a week, £5 a week if you're not doing much work in the house. So it looks and feels a little bit like the exempt payments, again, under ITEPA for people under home working arrangements where they choose to work from home. So I don't think we need to get too excited about the value of these flat rate bases for expenditure. Right, so what's the Chancellor said about capital taxation? The first thing is in respect of the CGT annual exemption. And again, and there's a number we've been becoming rapidly familiar with, there's going to be an increase by 1%. But that doesn't happen until 2014, April 2014. So that means that the annual exemption is going to remain at $10,600 for the next tax year, and then the annual exemption goes up to $11,000 for 2014-15 and $11,100 for 2015-16. Something that I did find quite interesting was the proposal, very much hidden away in the small print, of this new employee shareholder status. And this is the government introducing a new employee shareholder status, which gives individual employees a stake in their employer's business. Now, we're very far from the detail of this, and we've only just got a general picture here, but generally speaking, and I think these are the kind of what I'm going to call the Tesco schemes, which have been very successful. You know, people feel part of the business if they're actually given some shares here. But the proposal appears to be that from April 2013, gains of up to $50,000 on shares acquired by employee shareholders will be exempt from CGT. Now, how that ties into the existing employee incentive schemes, you know, either through direct ownership or through option schemes, I think remains to be seen. So that's just a little tantalising glimpse of something that's going to happen, and we very much need to wait for the details on that one. And one last thought on capital taxation, and that is that the inheritance tax nil rate band, which has been stuck at £325,000 for a few years now, isn't going anywhere, but it is going to increase by 1% in 2015-16 to £329,000. Now, that's not a great increase. A lot of people are saying that it should go up to £1 million and take most of the estates in the UK out of it. But given that since late 2007, you can use the unused proportion of a deceased spouse's or civil partner's nil rate band, in effect, it does give you a doubling under the current numbers of 325 to 650,000. So it's not all doom and gloom in that area. And one last thought on the business space is that in respect of IR35, where there's this tantalising statement there that the government is strengthening, I love that, strengthening the existing IR35 legislation to put beyond doubt whether it applies to office holder for tax purposes. Now, that is tantalising because it's not clear about what he's actually on about. So I think we're going to have to wait on that. But I think my immediate reaction to that is that IR35 has generally been a disaster for successive governments since 2000, when it was first introduced. The amounts of money coming in from IR35 are just pathetic. And we all know how many hours we've spent agonising about it. So in 2011 and 2012, we've had shifts. 2012, we've had the new business entity test coming in. So it looks as though this is just an extension of that. So quite whether this is the controlling persons legislation or whether this is just yet another addition to IR35, I think remains to be seen. As we come down towards the end of this Autumn Statement podcast, I'd like to have a quick look at what the Chancellor said about pensions. Now, there's clearly been quite a lot of movement in pensions over the last few years. We've got a Pensions Act 2008, which brought us the beginnings of auto-enrolment from October 2012. And remember, that's meant to be over a five-year period, although that's going to stretch, I think, into 2018. We've seen lots of other changes. The two that came out of the Autumn Statement were in respect of the annual allowance and the lifetime allowance. Now, most people in the UK, I think it's fair to say, won't be affected by these changes because most people's pension pot, I think the average mean pension pot in the UK is something like about £60,000. So if that's an average, then obviously there are going to be a lot of people that are way, way below that. So what are the announcements and what are the implications of that? Well, the first, the annual allowance, is going to be reduced from £50,000 contributions to £40,000 for a maximum tax relief. Now, that's due to come in 2014. So we've got a little bit of a breathing space there. And we'll need to see whether the government is going to introduce any kind of transitional legislation to cover that period. I wonder actually if they won't do it. They just accept that people will pump up their pensions a bit, which after all, in the long term, is quite a good thing because it takes them away from having to rely upon the state. Now, that going from 50 to 40, as I said, it's unlikely to affect most people because most people put quite modest contributions into their pension pot, if indeed at all. At the moment, you can still put money into a pension pot up to £50,000 and get your tax relief. And although you can't carry back a pension contribution, remember you can use the unused proportion and you can use it for a maximum of 3 years back, which means effectively you've got this theoretical maximum of £200,000 in any one tax year. And even though before April 2011, when the annual allowance was much higher at £255,000, if your 3 years back from where you stand at the moment goes into that period prior to April 2011, which it could well do, then you're deemed to still be at £50,000 in that year, even though the actual annual allowance was £255,000. So looking forward then, we've got this change to the annual allowance from 2014-15, but it will also affect the standard lifetime allowance, which is going to drop at the same point, that's April 2014, from 1.5 million to 1.25 million. Now, when we last dropped the lifetime allowance, we've always had in the legislation this kind of transitional protection, the so-called fixed protection regime, which says that if you're above the new limit, then you can freeze your fund and protect the excess, but you won't be able to make any further contributions into your pot. And it looks like we're going to get that transitional fixed protection regime again for all those who think they're going to be affected by that reduction in the lifetime allowance. Now, we're going to have some legislation in Finance Bill 2013, so I think that's a bit of a wait-and-see job. There are one or two other bits there. If you've got somebody who's in capped drawdown, then at the moment, the maximum they can take out is 100% of the so-called GAD, that's the Government Actuarial Department theoretical annuity rates. And we did hear in the Autumn Statement that that's gone up back to the pre-2011 numbers of 120% of the GAD. And of course, that was when we didn't call it drawdown. That was when we called it unsecured pension. So there you go, a couple of little extras there, predominantly for higher net worth individuals. But because that's become quite a press comment area, I thought we'd just quickly touch on that as well. I'd just like a word or two before we close off here about the comment, and quite a lot of comment, about the multinationals such as Starbucks, Amazon and Google, and as to whether they're paying the right amount of tax. Now, there's been a huge moral grandstanding here by the Chancellor and his team about Starbucks, you know, earning so much money in the UK and yet paying no corporation tax at all. And of course, what that misses is all the other taxes that they pay. Every time you have a cup of coffee in Starbucks, then subject to the credits, the VAT bill will be paid across to HMRC. Every time a delivery lorry fills up with diesel, there's excise duty that's payable over to HMRC. Every time they sign a lease on a building in a new Starbucks coffee shop, then stamp duty land tax is going to flow across to the government. And of course, it's very easy for the politicians because they know they can sort of whip it up into a sort of I hate multinationals storm to simply ignore the other taxes that are paid. And the moral grandstanding by the Chancellor and his team, I must say, it does slightly stick in my throat. I mean, is this the same Danny Alexander who flipped his principal private residence in order to maximise his particular tax relief? So there's always the worry there that, you know, you've got some hidden agendas and people are very good at pointing the fingers at others and yet ignoring their own moral failures. And I suppose for me, morality and tax just don't mix in any proportions. It's a bit like oil and water. But nevertheless, I think the trend that we're seeing is that Starbucks have agreed voluntarily to pay tax. You know, that's bonkers, isn't it? Agreeing to pay some tax when you don't actually have to pay it. But of course, they're doing because they realise that that's a small price to pay for the alternative, which is huge damage to their brand. So I think we're going to see more of that. And I think in the next year or so, we'll perhaps see some more legislation on dealing with that. The trouble is that Britain cannot act alone. We have about 137 double tax treaties that we've concluded with other countries as to where things will be taxed. So in something like the Starbucks system, you know, their use of intellectual property, the use of the Starbucks logo and so forth, probably ends up getting scooped out to somewhere like Luxembourg, where it has a very low tax rate, and then on-scooped back to the USA. And we can't act unilaterally on that. It's a bit like the Republic of Ireland issue that we were talking about earlier. You know, they've set their corporation tax rate at 12.5%, and of course that will be attractive to people. So, you know, unless you're going to point the finger at pariah states and call them pariah states, then you're always going to have that mismatch in tax rates. Now, in terms of tackling offshore evasion, which I guess is what this one's all about, HMRC is looking to get in on that, both at the corporate and at the personal level. And it's interesting that the arrangement that we've got with Switzerland, which is the, come on, how many people have you got that have got money in your bank accounts in Switzerland that belong in the UK and should be taxed in the UK? Well, HMRC's estimates are that that could raise as much as £5 billion. And I think it's worth noting, and there's been a little bit of press comment about this if you've looked carefully, that the USA is trying exactly the same thing. The Obama administration is passing some internal US law, which means that people outside the US, even though they're not legally bound by it, will have to give information to the IRS, the Inland Revenue Service in the USA, about American nationals who effectively have got money overseas. Now, the IRS, that's the American version of HMRC, reckon that the amount at stake there could be as high as $20 billion per annum. So if they're right, it's a huge sum. But I think we're going to see more of that. And of course, Switzerland will have to play ball, as will the Channel Islands and the British Virgin Islands. Otherwise, they're going to be sort of pilloried as pariah states, and I guess bad things will start to happen. So the Swiss arrangement is sort of coming into play, and I think we'll see more of that with other countries, people with offshore accounts in places like Malta and the British Virgin Islands, not to say, of course, the Channel Islands. So the government's after tackling tax evasion, of course, very evocative idea there, but We've also got, too, the general anti-avoidance rule, which is coming in from April 2013, and a few mentions of that in the autumn statement. And they're trying to get a bit more aggressive when it comes to getting information and applying their penalty powers. So I think we can see more of that too, in addition, of course, to the sort of thing that they grandstand, which is closing down yet more loopholes. Right, well, I guess that's just about it. That's the main issues there as I see them for AAT members. I'm not trying to clog this up with numbers because I could just read out a sea of numbers and I don't think that would be of any use to anybody. So this is just my personal take on what I see as interesting for AAT members. We'll obviously have a lot more detail when the draft legislation is published, and I'm sure there are many exciting hours ahead poring over the clauses. Well, I hope that's been of some use, and I very much look forward to speaking to you soon, or perhaps even seeing you on an AAT tax course. Cheerio.